This is John Galt speaking.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Harmon Kaslow. He's the producer of the Atlas Shrugged movie project. The third and final installment is coming out September 12th. Harmon, yes. Thanks for talking to us.
It's good to be here, Nick.
Set the stage. What happens for those who are not absolutely sure of the plot of Atlas Shrugged? What's the big finale?
Well, the book, first off, the book written more than 50 years ago, is 1,200 pages, split into three parts. And in producing the movies, we decided to follow the structure of the book. So here we are at part three, like parts one and two, made it as a standalone movie. So if you haven't read the book, you'll understand. But basically now we're reaching really the romantic part of the story where our hero Dagny Taggart, a very hardworking, tenacious woman who is fighting against the forces of a brutal, over-regulating, interfering government. Sound familiar?
Yeah, this is fiction.
I mean, we're in D.C., right? So this is all, was easy to state. But she ends up meeting this mysterious character, John Galt. And John Galt's, a talented engineer who worked for this incredible motor company that then decided to embrace kind of this Marxist philosophy of paying people not based on what they produce, but based on need, and he was not going to put up with that. And through the story, he starts recruiting the productive people in society to leave, to, in a sense, go on strike.
And that's the metaphor of Atlas Shrugged. What happens to the world if the people who really hold it up and support it disappear?
Exactly, and he's going to stop, in a sense, this motor of the world. And so in part three, she finally meets up with the man who has been systematically taking away from Dagny the very people she needs to keep her railroad afloat. And she ends up going to this incredible place, this Atlantis, where all these people...
And this is, of course, Galt's Gulch.
Galt's Gulch.
The origin of the phrase going Galt, of just giving up and moving away and not putting up with things. Can you describe, what does Galt's Gulch look like?
Well, I mean, it's a magical place. The orange juice is as orange as it could possibly be. There's very little rules or regulations because people believe in honor, and they believe in free markets. They believe in competition. And really, it's where they're liberated.
Talk a little bit over the course of the first two movies. 2011 was the first one. How has the conception of the project changed? Some of the reviews have not been kind.
Right.
What have you learned along the way?
Good question. So John Aglioloro, the gentleman who owns the rights, when we started out, it was, how do you faithfully adapt a book like this? There's many messages that Ayn Rand is exploring in the book. Some are about free markets, some are about relationships, some of them are political in nature. And so, it's trying to find a cinematic thread.
Right.
And you're
as
right.
As you said, it's 1,200 pages.
It's very challenging.
You can spend challenging. Your whole life explicating all the plots and themes.
Not only that, but the book has inspired and influenced so many people, and it's one of these great pieces of literature that as you're reading it, you begin to see the movie in your own head. Mm-hmm. And so, one of the things, people would expect to see that movie that they imagine in their mind. And so, really what we've done and try to tell people is, this is more of a celebration of Ayn Rand's ideas. Being able to adapt this book would require significantly more time and money than John and I had to execute.
Well, talk about Rand's legacy, because this, I always think of her and Jack Kerouac as the two post-war American writers who still have a massive influence, novelists who have a massive influence on people. They still rock people's world, whatnot. What is it about Rand's message or method that seems to be, it just keeps growing. It's in a way, people like Saul Bellow, writers who are considered much more literary and much more kind of highbrow, don't exert the same influence over the day-to-day culture as someone like Rand. What is her secret?
Well, I think that she really hit a nerve on a lot of people in this country who believe in a constitutional republic, who sort of embrace perhaps the libertarian point of view from a political standpoint, who felt like they needed a voice. And she, just having come from Russia and really kind of land in the land of opportunity and see the greatness of America, to see all the liberty and freedoms that we have, and to begin to see a government beginning to take a position that would later on, you know, take those freedoms and liberties away from us. And now, here she's written a book, wanted to express those feelings, wanted to warn us. And so much of it is happening that I think, you know, her legacy is just continues to be written every day as we see the Obama administration, in a sense, legislate without going to Congress. This is stuff lifted right out of Atlas Shrugged. What happens when you begin to let the government get away with things that are really outside of what the founding fathers envisioned?
Do you think, you know, from a Hollywood perspective, people always talk about, you know, Hollywood is filled with liberals. It's also true that Hollywood is filled with people who talk about the greatness of Ayn Rand or how Ayn Rand inspired them, people like Oliver Stone, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. I mean, across the political spectrum, Hollywood and Ayn Rand seem to go together. Do you sense there is a thaw in the kind of political correctness in Hollywood? Are people more interested in exploring libertarian themes or individualist themes or something different, or is it really as bad as it's always been?
Yeah, I think that at least what John and I experienced firsthand was Hollywood really lacks the courage to take a message as like Ayn Rand's, like the one in Atlas Shrugged, and believe that there's an audience for that. There isn't that sort of courage. So I think they want to play safe. And I think that they are heavily influenced by political correctness. And there's also this kind of herd mentality, that sort of collectivist almost mentality that Hollywood likes to subscribe to, this and a feeling that you know, we should be sacrificing, and all of these sorts of concepts that really run
contrary.
And if you go to Hollywood, the sacrifice they make from a $17 million home isn't too much of a sacrifice.
Right, right.
But it's, I guess, the feeling of guilt associated that they subscribe
to. Do you think any of that is changing, especially as the kind of studio system seems to break down, or there are alternatives to that? Is production becoming more decentralized, and will that allow more points of view to be represented?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, Atlas Shrugged is actually, some people view it as science fiction.
Right.
And looking at, for example, Reardon Metal is what we now have as titanium. And I think the internet is this great technological, you know, development that really has knocked down barriers. I think it has Hollywood very scared. You have a lot of players who now can bring content to anyone on the planet, versus before you wouldn't be able to, you know, reach an audience unless you were one of these powerful studios.
Atlas Shrugged Part 3 opens September 12th. What's the best place to get all the information about it?
The movie's going to be opening on September 12th. Our website, atlasshruggedmovie.com. Just Google Atlas Shrugged. We're the first one under there, and that'll have a list of all the theaters. And I think people will really enjoy seeing not only the last part, but it will give them a good sense of the message and the real meaning as to why so many people have been inspired by this great book.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Harmon Kaslow, producer of Atlas Shrugged, the movie, it opens, the final part of the trilogy opens September 12th. Thanks, Harmon.
Thank you, Nick.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.